Welcome back to Sunday Journal on 98.5 WILD. 98.5 WILD is a clear channel station in New Orleans. We're also available live on the web at WILDFM.com. That's where you can find the Sunday Journal webpage. My name is Hal Clark, and once again, happy Father's Day to all dads today. The POV independent documentary series enters its 21st year on PBS, beginning with the film titled Traces of the Trade, A Story from the Deep North. Directed by Katrina Brown, it airs nationwide on PBS Tuesday, June 24th. Traces of the Trade chronicles Brown's discovery of how her New England ancestors, the DeWolfs, were the largest slave trading family in U.S. history. And with us by phone to discuss the film is Katrina Brown. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. I have to say at the top, what an amazing documentary. What an amazing film. Probably one of the best films I've seen in years. Quite remarkable. And congratulations on your first time effort.
Thank you.
Certainly. Well, Ms. Brown, you've indicated that for a long time you didn't have direct knowledge about your ancestors' involvement in the slave trade, but something about it was always present. In what ways did you see it?
Well, I'd have to say it was the type of thing where it was mentioned in passing, and probably, basically I re-found out when I was 28 years old and when I was 28 and got a booklet from my grandmother. At first, when I read that I had slave trading ancestors, I was shocked, as if I was finding out for the first time, and then I realized I already knew. And when I went to think about, well, how do I know? The best I can conclude, as with many of my cousins, is that it would be mentioned in passing, and almost as if it was like these pirates, these rapscallions, boys will be boys, this sort of dismissive air about it, of not taking it incredibly seriously. So no one ever sat me down and talked to me about it with the weight and seriousness that it deserved.
In the film, you talk about a sort of nursery rhyme that you and other family members sang as children, and it had historical significance.
It's actually a rhyme. I myself didn't grow up saying it, but my parents' generation, my mom's generation did, and others in the family, so I became aware of it, and it's just one of those chilling moments when you think about what was done with a subject, with people's lives, basically. So it was about two young children who were enslaved by my ancestors, whose names were Adjoa and Polydor, and the family made up a nursery rhyme about them, Adjoa and Polydor sitting on the cellar door, Polydor and Adjoa sitting on the cellar way, up went the cellar door, down went Polydor, that kind of, like, as if it's something to laugh and play with, as opposed to that these are two people who were enslaved.
And the film basically chronicles the three-week journey to Africa and Cuba that you and nine family members made. Was there a single discovery that inspired you to coordinate and ultimately take the trip?
I think what really, the same moment that I rediscovered this when I was in my late 20s was the same moment that scholars were starting to tell the story of New England's complicity in slavery. So this is a long buried history. And if this had just been my family alone, I probably would have, definitely felt like it was something I needed to deal with, but I wouldn't have made a film about it because it would have felt like more of an anomaly. But little did I realize once I started digging that the entire northern economy was intertwined with slavery and the slave trade, and it's so it's been so swept under the rug in our education, in our history classes, in our textbooks. So that amnesia. Our amnesia and our family was really parallel to that larger northern amnesia, and that felt very worthy of passing on and sharing.
And I tell you, for me, that was probably the most shocking revelation of your film, because New Englanders basically sort of promoted themselves as being abolitionists.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't really hear a lot about the intricate details about how New England was, a bastion for the slave trade.
Yeah. And it's a classic story where the winners write the history books, basically. So the North, by winning the Civil War and certainly the North was the force for abolition, but there was slavery in the North for 200 years, so it was abolished earlier than the South, but not by a lot when you put it in the sweep of the couple centuries. And even after even after slavery was abolished in the North, the economy was still totally intertwined. So it was Southern cotton that was brought up to the Northern textile mills. And, you know, the financiers in New York were providing the financial mechanism to keep it all going. And the slave trade itself, you know, it was mostly Northern ships that conducted the slave trade because they were the ones with the maritime economy. And they traded with the islands where it was all slave-based economy. So just everywhere I turned, it was, you know, a revelation, one revelation after another.
This is Sunday Journal on 98.5 WYOD. My name is Hal Clark. We're chatting with filmmaker Katrina Brown. Her debut documentary airs on PBS on Tuesday, June 24th. It's titled Traces of the Trade, A Story from the Deep North. And it chronicles how Ms. Brown found out that her ancestors were the largest slave trading family in U.S. history. 9 members made the trip, but you actually queried more than 9 members. Talk to us about that process and how you ended up with just 9.
Well, there was a great uncle of mine who kind of kept track of a lot of family members, so I wrote to about 200 relatives, and I heard from about 60, and because I decided to make a film about this, it would be a big deal for people to come with me, so I asked them to think about coming on the journey and that it would be on camera. And I said, you know, it's for white Americans, we get so nervous and scared about delving into stuff like this. So I wanted us as a family to model the idea that one could do that. But I said, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to say the wrong thing. We're not going to do it quite right, but we have to be willing to try. And that felt really important. So after long talks with a lot of different people, after long talks with a handful of people, 9 decided to sign up to come on the journey, and we went to Rhode Island, Ghana, and Cuba.
Talk to us about the range of reaction that you received from some of your family members. What was one of the more interesting things that some family members said in terms of why they did not want to venture out on this trip?
You know, no one wanted to deny what happened, and no one thought it wasn't a big deal, but I think there was some sense that why bring this up, that it's kind of asking for trouble, and that, you know, better to keep the skeletons in the closet. And one person in particular had a couple concerns. One was how his black colleagues would treat him if they found out. He felt like we would be potentially targeted for, you know, for reparations and for basically things that he felt we didn't do, our ancestors did, and we shouldn't be blamed for it. So it's a very, you know, it's a very loaded, very divisive subject, and we certainly, you know, no one in our family inherited money from the slave trade. It was pretty much spent back, this was 7 generations ago, but we're still, you know, we're still very much in the elite, basically, and it's an uncomfortable position to have to look at that, notice that, and ask some tough questions about what that implies for today.
Let's talk briefly about the 2 places that you and your family members visited, Ghana and also Cuba. What was the most interesting revelation for you in Ghana?
Well, there's nothing that can compare to going and visiting the dungeons in the slave forts. It just, you know, it's one thing to read about these things and try to imagine. It's another thing to actually go to the location of just intense, intense suffering. And I think for all of us, I think I can speak for everyone, it was among the more intense moments of our entire lives because the camera light battery died, so we actually were suddenly pitched into complete darkness, and we were tempted to leave immediately, but I suggested we stay, and we just stayed in the darkness, I think all of our capacity for empathy and for really getting it, what had happened, was multiplied, you know, 100-fold.
And also, that is where you found out about the names of the people who your earlier ancestors sang about.
Yeah, we were just by chance, you know, we were in a park, we were getting a tour in a nature preserve, and the tour guide was explaining how Ghanaians, what the naming practices were, and mentioned that, you know, it corresponds with days of the week. So he said, if you're female born on Monday, your name would be Ajua. And it just suddenly we all flashed on, you know, in the nursery rhyme, the pronunciation was Ajue. But we knew that it was basically the same name. And so to suddenly have that intimate knowledge that this girl had been born on a Monday and taken so far away from her family, her culture, her home. Yeah, sure.
Well, let's talk about Cuba. A lot of people, for whatever reason, don't associate the slave trade with Cuba. Talk to us about your experiences there.
Well, part of what the DeWolfs did that made them basically the largest slave trading dynasty was, you know, they developed all aspects of the business over three generations. So part of that involved buying and running plantations in Cuba. So they had sugar and coffee plantations that would enable them to bring sugar back up to Rhode Island to make the rum that was then taken to trade in West Africa. And Cuba itself is an interesting kind of another untold story, but it basically became this kind of, there's sort of an outlaw culture there in Rhode Island. Also had, I would have to say, an outlaw culture because the slave trade was abolished first by individual states and then federally in 1808. So this year is actually the bicentennial of the abolition of the slave trade. Excuse me. And people like my ancestors, the DeWolfs, and a lot of others continued in the trade even after it was illegal, and Cuba became a real hub for that. So there were all sorts of, you know, buying and selling ships for a dollar so you could raise a Cuban or a Spanish flag instead of an American one to get around the law, and my ancestors were just totally tied up in all that.
Ms. Brown, our audience is primarily African American. What do you hope that we will understand about the film and what you were hoping to accomplish?
Well, certainly at the most basic level, the film is intended to be an acknowledgement and a process of, you know, telling the truth about one family, but also the larger region. And I think of it as an attempt to basically apologize. You know, I've gotten, at first I felt so guilty as if I had done it myself and, you know, wanted to apologize as if I had done it myself. I've gotten a little more rational over the years. So I think of it as an acknowledgement and an expression of deep grief at what my ancestors did. And I hope people will tune in and watch it because we also go into a whole piece about reparations and thinking about the larger societal issues that, you know, are still, the inequality is still there and white privilege is alive and well, sadly. And I've just learned so much through this journey, and I'm hoping to pass on to other white Americans a sense of, you know, responsibility, and also to say, like, let's figure this out, because I think we're all, you know, there's so many dynamics that have us really uncomfortable and awkward and kind of tongue-tied around Black Americans, and I feel like if we can work through some of those feelings and dynamics and show up for the conversation and the work of racial justice, all the better, and we need to. So I hope people will watch it and also use the film, because it's intended to be used in churches and community groups, dialogue groups, so that people can have some of those conversations, be it separately or together, because I think we all have different work we need to do to heal from this just really atrocious history.
Once again, the film is titled Traces of the Trade, A Story from the Deep North. It's directed by Katrina Brown. It airs nationwide on PBS Tuesday, June 24th. Make sure you check your local listings. And as I said at the top of the program, it's an absolutely fantastic film, and I highly recommend that our audience watches it. And don't ask me for my copy, okay? I'm not going to share it with you. Make sure you check it out on Tuesday, June 24th. Ms. Katrina Brown, thank you so much for joining us, okay?
You're welcome. Thank you.
Have a great day. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.